Welcome back to After the Buzzer. I'm Gordy Jones, and joining us, as always, on the phone line is that Mike Gross.
Hi, Gordy. How are you?
Outstanding, sir. And we have a few topics we wanted to bat around today. First off, we're going to start off with talking about, as usual, there is an impasse in Major League Baseball, and where have we heard that before? This one involves exactly what form the coronavirus delayed 2020 season will take and how the financial pie will be divvied up. The other day, the owners put forth a proposal that seemed like it was going to be accepted by the players, but was not, and it called for 60 games starting on July 19th or 20th and running through September 27th. With full prorated salaries, which has been a bone of contention throughout this process. But that was rejected, and the players only today, and today being Thursday, June 18th, counter proposal of 70 games beginning on July 19th, running through the end of September. Of course, with the still the prorated, the full prorated. And one of the interesting things that caught my eyes was a universal DH in use.
Yes.
So this is where we are. So the other day I wrote something for my blog where I mentioned how I love baseball. I mean, I'm not as enraptured by it as some are, but I like baseball a lot. I like to watch it. I've liked to cover it over the years.
Are you as enraptured as you used to be?
I would say no. I mean,
yeah,
I don't...
Me too.
Yeah, I think it probably is related a lot to these periodic glitches that they have either over free agency or the steroid things or what have you. But, you know, I still like baseball. I particularly like playoff baseball, but I don't know where they go from here. You know, it doesn't seem like that big of a gap. You know, one side wants 60, the other wants 70. Well, let's split the difference and go play some games.
Yeah. Well, here's, I mean, I don't know the details of this, of the current, brouhaha in great detail,
right.
But how can there be any question that they should get their full prorated salary?
I don't. Well, the owner's argument is that the more games that are played, especially with no fans, the more money they will lose. And then, of course, the counter argument from the players is, okay, well, let's see your books, which it always is. That's always where we end up with all of these labor impasses that they've had over the years, and the owners say, no way, we're not showing that. But then just recently, Turner came through with this big new contract for the playoffs. So I'm going to guess, I'm going to take a wild guess that the owners are not exactly losing money off of anything. I mean,
another interesting piece of this that I haven't seen a lot of reporting on, and this is also very true in college football.
Yep.
Is what are the relationships between these teams and their broadcast partners,
right,
when something like this happens? I mean, for example, now just to give you college football, Fox and the Big Ten,
mm-hmm,
co-own the Big Ten network.
Mm-hmm.
Now, are you telling me that Fox is going to, like, pull all their rights fees because they're not getting as many football games for 1 year when they have a financial, when they have an equal to the Big Ten's financial interest in that network?
No.
You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
I can't believe that Comcast and the, I guess it's not Comcast anymore with the Phillies.
Right.
But whoever it is, what is it, NBC Sports?
It is, whatever. Yes. Uh-huh.
I can't believe that they can't work something out financially when it is obviously in both parties' best interest.
Yeah.
The idea that this just has to be financial Armageddon because there aren't going to be games, that seems too simple to me. I want to know more about that.
Fair.
And I'm trying to find out more about that, and it's not, I don't see it. I don't see that anymore.
Yeah, but this is a side point that Jeff Young, my former colleague at the Intel, mentioned to me in the wake of what I wrote the other day. He said that it seems incredibly tone deaf on the part of the players and owners both, given the financial hardships that are going on among the average citizens
yeah,
during
sure,
this
but
pandemic.
But that's just, that's a staple of his.
Well, unfortunately, true. Yes, unfortunately, true.
And you know, you could argue that okay, there's this big pile of money on the table. We have to figure out how we're going to divide it up.
Right.
One party says this, the way we're dividing it up is not acceptable. Well, okay, then we have to sit down and fight about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's anybody would do. Mother Teresa would do that. nobody would not do that. Nobody would just say, okay, forget it. You guys just do whatever you want. That's not going to happen. So you're at this spot. It's tone deaf, but it's it's almost like a catch-22 of tone deafness. There's almost no way around it. I just don't see why the prorated salary thing isn't a given.
Yeah.
Whether they play 20 games or 100 or however many, they somewhere in between. I don't see how that isn't a given. And when that wasn't a given, then it seemed like the players got pissed off, and then it's okay, now we're going to stick our tongues out at each other for a long time.
Which, it always seems to be. Just the mere thought of Mother Teresa sitting down at the bargaining table is a highlight to me.
She's a deal maker.
She'll get it done.
But here's what I want to ask you this, Gordy, because is baseball. Beyond the labor versus management stuff, forgetting that.
Right.
It's a much less appealing, much less interesting game to me than it used to be.
Yeah, and why is that, would you say?
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons. It just keeps getting slower and slower and slower, and I think the sort of sabermetrics revolution.
Mm-hmm.
Which changed the way baseball was played in a really basic, fundamental way, while it was correct.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a big adherent to it 40 years ago. I think it made the game a lot less entertaining.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think that's part of it.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not so sure that genie can get stuff back in the bottle either. I'm not sure you can go back to the way things were.
How do you fix that? That's exactly right. How do you fix that?
Yeah, and I still think about, you talked about the slowness of the game. The classic 1960 Game 7 between the Yankees and the Pirates, won by the Pirates in the bottom of the ninth on a Bill Mazeroski home run, that took less than 2.5 hours to play. And it was a 10-9 game with multiple pitching changes, all kind of quirky things going on. 2.5 hours. If you had that, the only time you get that is when Greg Maddux pitched in the last 40 years, literally.
When I've been watching, we've all been watching all these replays of old sports events now during this pandemic. And when I watch baseball, I'm switching around a channel and I'm watching some old sitcom and then I'm watching politics. And I think, I click away from the baseball game and they're in the third inning.
Yeah.
And I feel like I've been away for like an hour and a half, And I think, I forgot I was watching baseball. I go back to the baseball game. They're in the fourth inning. it's just like, it's just so slow. And this is in the 90s now, I'm going to say. Mm-hmm. I was covering a golf tournament. I think it was the U.S. Senior Open at the Saucon Valley. And they had ESPN Classic was on the TV in the media dining tent.
Right.
And it was the World Series between the Orioles and the Reds in 1970.
Yes.
The one where Brooks Robinson went.
Yes, 1970. Yeah. Yes.
And the pace of the game.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing to watch the pace of the game.
Yeah.
The guy, the pitcher got the ball and threw it.
Mm-hmm.
And the hitter got in the box and stayed there.
Mm-hmm.
And the pace of the game was—it was almost like, what sport is this?
Yeah.
It was amazing, and that was in the 90s.
Right.
I mean, it's gotten exponentially worse since.
And it's so that feeds into the point that I also made in this piece that I wrote the other day, that the average age of the Major League Baseball fan is 57. In the NFL, it's 50. In the NBA, it's 42, which actually sounds high to me, NBA-wise. But be that as it may, what happens going forward? I mean, not to be crass, but I mean, the fan base of Major League Baseball is going to die out. And then what happens to the game?
Yeah, no question. And that brings up a couple of points. Number one, I want to know more about that poll. I want to know more about how that was done. I'm always a little leery about some of these things. How do they define a fan? But regardless, it's the same for every sport. It's not different for baseball. And the other thing is, from your piece, is some of the stuff that Pat Williams said.
Right.
We all grew up with baseball, and I don't think that's going to change. I think it already has, and it certainly is going to. Mm-hmm. I think he's wrong about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Pat, by the way, is 80 years old, and he is the former Sixers general manager and one of the co-founders of the Orlando Magic. So he has been part of the NBA for literally 50 years.
Right.
But he, way back when, he was also a catcher in the Philadelphia Phillies minor league system and then became an executive in their chain before the NBA lured him off. And now, at present, he's trying to draw a team to the Orlando area, whether it's the Rays moving or whether there's an expansion team, which appears far less likely. So he obviously has a vested interest in that sort of a mindset. But I agree with you. I don't know that's necessarily true what he said.
Yeah, it's an increasing and it's vanishingly less true as time passes. But there's so many things about this that are striking, mm-hmm. about the way baseball is sort of perceived nationally. Like there's a player in baseball right now, Mike Trout, mm-hmm. who you could make an argument is or is going to be one of the best five, maybe one of the best two or three mm-hmm. players. Baseball players who ever lived,
right.
and he's not, he didn't, it doesn't seem to me, maybe I'm wrong about this, maybe I'm out of the loop, it doesn't seem to me like he's 20% the celebrity that Cal Ripken was.
Yeah.
At his peak.
Yeah.
Forget Mickey Mantle, Willie Mays, Ted Williams, and also, there's nothing like, the endless and actually tedious Kobe versus LeBron or LeBron versus Michael. Mm-hmm. That doesn't exist for Mike Trout versus Barry Bonds. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That doesn't exist at all. You don't see that anywhere on social media or any other kind mm-hmm. of media. Or Trout versus Mays or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think that's a really good barometer of how much baseball's place in the American life has just declined, diminished. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's just because of the factors we've already mentioned or the fact that the game isn't marketed intelligently or what that might be. But what's your take on that?
Well, here's another piece of it. Despite everything that we just said, baseball is pretty financially successful because these local TV deals are the driving force. It's not national TV. Mm-hmm. It's local TV deals that each major league team has with its own, mm-hmm. Broadcast partner. And baseball is still, while most people are not huge fans of baseball writ large, a lot of people are fans of their local major league team.
I would say that's true, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who somewhat follow the Phillies, who don't, don't follow the sport mm-hmm. the way, like, an Eagles fan would follow the NFL.
Right, yeah, that's fair. It's very regional. That's very true. And in fact, nothing gathers momentum so quickly as when a team goes on a nice run like the Phillies in 2008 or 2009. In this area in particular, I think we see it just, there's a real, it really builds on itself and really gathers momentum, which is always kind of fun to ride that wave. But, here's the other end of the spectrum is, so what happens if they don't have a season? I mean, is this going to be like when the NHL canceled its season in 04, 05? And at least from where I sat, I don't think anybody really cared except like...
I don't know. It's one piece is, will anybody care? And the other piece is, will people come back? Will people come back to it in 2021? I don't know. I sort of think baseball one time, what was that, 94? Where they did not even have a World Series.
Correct. That's
the labor impasse that ended the season.
Yep.
And they did not have the postseason, didn't have the World Series, didn't have a champion. you know, I guess baseball, you could say, recovered from that. I mean, it's still, so I guess it would recover from this too.
Yeah, that's the other point that Jeff Young has always made about how it must be a great game because it overcomes the people who write it. But, you know, I don't think it's as great. I'll put it that way. And to your point about recovery, Bob Brookover wrote about this in the Inquirer on Sunday about how that strike in 1994 caused attendance to really sag. And it took a while. I forget the exact time frame, but it took a while for it to get back over 30,000 a game. And it might have been the Maguire-Sosa thing, which has since been found to be fraudulent in and of itself. So, I think it will recover. But, you know, again, I go back to that point I made earlier about, you know, it's the fan base is old. They need to find some way to get it younger. And I'm not sure that that's possible given the other entertainment alternatives and just given the slowness of the game that you referenced earlier.
I just kind of one more point that's in my head about this. I used to do a talk show, as you know, on a radio station that was part of the Phillies network. Mm-hmm. And they used to say that when the Phillies weren't good, it didn't hurt their business. It didn't hurt their numbers and their advertising business as much as you would think. Mm-hmm. Because when they're good, when they're in the pennant race, It kind of captures the imagination, as you were talking about, of the region, and then people want to watch it on television. But when they're not in the pennant race, people like to have it in the background while they're sitting on their porch having a beer, or they're watching the car, or so there's that tension. I don't know if tension is the right word, but there's that thing with baseball where it's a game that you play every day, and some people are very comfortable with that.
I think that's true.
There's a sort of comfort level with that, but that means it's not an event. That means that's sort of anti the spectacular event thing that people, I think, want in their entertainment now. So there's that tension that's always going to be there for baseball.
I think so too. So at any rate, I don't know if we've made any definitive conclusions here, but it will be interesting to see how this plays out because, you know, they're kind of getting down to it. We're getting into late June now, and they need to start spring training sometime in early July if they're going to have this truncated season. So it would behoove them to reach some sort of resolution very soon.
And they maybe could have had the summer, not to themselves, but largely to themselves, if they'd have got this cranked up in time. So again, shooting yourself in the foot.
Taking dead aim on both feet and opening fire.
Open fire, baby.
So we move on to our next topic, and that is how the college football season will or won't unfold. And today, Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, made this statement to CNN: unless players are essentially in a bubble, insulated from the community, and they are tested nearly every day, it would be very hard to see how football is able to be played this fall. If there is a second wave of the virus, which is certainly a possibility and which would be complicated by the predictable flu season, football may not happen this year. So as it stands right now, players have returned to campus, college football players have returned to campus for quote unquote voluntary workouts. And the season is supposed to begin August 29th. Penn State is scheduled right now to open on September 5th against Kent State. The NFL season is scheduled to begin on September 10th with camps opening July 22nd and the Hall of Fame game on August 6th. So just as a side like that, before we get into the meat of this, how would you feel about covering a game on September 5th if that's how it unfolds?
That's a really good question. I've talked to some of my colleagues about this, and we're wondering like how many people could they fit in that press box at Penn State, which is not a very good press box for a program the caliber, the scope of Penn State,
right.
And would I feel comfortable being in that press box, or would they let us be on the sidelines or something? I mean, I don't know how it happens. I don't know how they play football. Mm-hmm. I don't know how we cover football. And it's funny how I think this has generally happened with all sports. Mm-hmm. When this thing happened, there was a long period of inaction for everybody.
Right.
Where we're trying to figure, I don't even know if they were trying to figure anything out. And then it seemed like a relatively short period of time where, okay, plan, we're going to do this.
Right.
And now people are sort of realizing the implications of going to do this, what it really means.
Mm-hmm.
The Kyrie Irving thing,
yep.
Although I don't think Kyrie Irving is a trenchant analyst of anything, but I think that's part of it. You know, I mean, you had months to figure this out, and the Players Association was, in the NBA case, was supposedly the driving force in starting making this happen, and then it seems like they arrived at an agreement in principle to do this thing in Orlando in a bubble, blah blah blah, and now all of a sudden people are thinking about the practical reality of it. Well, you should have been. You had 2 months to think about the practical reality of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's happening throughout sports, and certainly in football. Football seems to me more problematic than any of the others.
Yeah, and basically the problem we have in sports is the problem that we've encountered in everyday life. You have the health realities running headlong into the economic realities, and how you negotiate those two things is really difficult. I don't see an easy resolution, but in the college game in particular, where that drives the entire athletic department of every university, this is a huge factor. I mean, how their economics, you know, how their balance sheet turns out at the end of the fiscal year. And so there's that, but then, you know, you want everybody to be safe, and that, I'm not so sure that's possible.
So here's the thing that has happened now. This just happened today.
Mm-hmm.
Texas says 13 football players have tested positive for the coronavirus.
Yeah.
This now is what?
Yeah.
This is the real issue. Mm-hmm. And so apparently now some of the players are starting to say, I'm not comfortable with this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not comfortable really going forward with this.
Mm-hmm.
Supposedly the AD is saying, okay, everybody relax, be patient. Okay, how much is the bottom line motivating the AD saying that? You know what
exactly.
I mean?
Exactly.
It's everybody be patient. Everybody calm down. We're gonna work through this. Well, we don't know enough about that story yet, but that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Texas is not an aberration. That's going to happen elsewhere too.
Mm-hmm.
And we have here's another thing. Ohio State is making its players sign some kind of a waiver.
Hmm.
Is the waiver legally binding?
Hmm.
They say not. They say we would never like hold you over a barrel like that and make you sign something like that. But well, then what is it for? You know, we're heading into really choppy waters.
Yeah, I don't see an easy resolution to this at all, especially just given the nature of the game and just the close quarters that obviously everybody operates in. At the same time, you know, we get back to what you just said about the Texas AD and the economic realities and how that drives the bus in college sports in particular. So I don't see an easy solution unless, you know, there's some miraculous vaccine that's developed between now and September. And I don't think that's happening from everything.
Yeah, I don't think it is either. That apparently takes a long time
to
make a vaccine happen. And we're not going to have normalcy in our lives, anything like what you would call normalcy,
mm-hmm.
until that does happen.
Yeah.
But I go back again with the financial imperative with college football.
Mm-hmm.
I go back again to what I was saying earlier about these arrangements that these conferences
mm-hmm.
have with their broadcast partners.
Yeah.
I can't believe there's a ton of money relative to college football. There's a ton of money involved here. But relative to the overall budget of Penn State University,
mm-hmm.
it's a big piece of change, but it's not a deal breaker. It's not a end of the world thing.
Mm-hmm.
And these broadcast partners, these media companies, have a humongous financial interest in this. And I just can't believe that can't be negotiated and smoothed over for a year. And we know that a lot of these colleges, including Penn State, have significant financial reserves. Sandy Barber has said they're going to be fine for a year.
Right.
They're not in any trouble as far as dropping teams or not being able to operate. Obviously, most colleges are not Penn State.
Right. So what, in their case, what percentage would you put on the likelihood of the season beginning as scheduled?
30%.
Wow. Yeah. So that will be interesting. I mean, we've seen some of these alternative plans that have been thrown out there too, about them starting later, like way later, or the non-conference games being lopped off the schedule. There's some options out there, but it's a really obviously an unprecedented situation, and it obviously needs to be handled adroitly. And I do wonder just, you know, if health is going to take a backseat in some of these cases. And that's a troubling scenario to me.
A couple of things that football has going for it in this sense. We're talking about college football. We're mm-hmm. talking about 18 to 20 year old, very healthy people. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about it's outside. Mm-hmm. Which it's those two things seem to make a huge difference in terms of, certainly in terms of your danger of really getting sick mm-hmm. and your life being threatened.
Right.
Even the large gatherings that there have been, it seems like there's a huge difference between being outside and being inside.
Yeah.
So those are two things that maybe are in the favor, but there's so many logistical things that are just mm-hmm. that are on the other side of the ledger, that are on the other side of the scales for this. I think football is, I have very much doubt that football can be played in anything like, you know, the form that, and honestly, James Franklin, when he's talked to us, and as he has a couple of times during this thing, mm-hmm. he seems to agree. Mm-hmm. I mean, he seems to see all the problems. And what if this happens? Mm-hmm. What if that happens? He seems to get it, and he seems to genuinely, like, believe in science, which that ought to go without saying. Human beings ought to believe in science, but we know that's not the case. So, I mean, he gets it, but, you know, I don't know what comes from that. It's great that he gets it, but
how much say does he have? I mean, would it be his call, or would it be Sandy Barber's call?
Yeah, I think it would be more Sandy Barber's call, even for football, even for some as big as Penn State football.
Yeah. So this again, we're not reaching any solid conclusions here on today's podcast.
And neither is anyone else on Earth.
Yeah, correct. So we're just batting around possibilities and kind of wondering at what might happen next, but. You know, if you think about it, that's sort of how it is for sports, generally speaking. But these are much larger issues at stake, clearly.
Yeah, much larger and much more complicated.
Yeah.
This is so far, it's become the moldiest cliche in the world to say we're in uncharted territory. It's become a moldy cliche because it's so true. I mean, it's mm-hmm. amazing.
Yes. So we move on from there. Speaking of health, this is something I'm working on a story currently about Tamika Catchings, who, for those of you who might not know, her dad, Harvey Catchings, was a journeyman center in the NBA back in the 70s and 80s. And in the course of doing the story, I learned that Harvey had had a heart transplant last August at age 67. And he came through it pretty well, although that's obviously a very dicey thing. And that kind of fit into a larger scenario and a tragic one at that, that has seen many Sixers big men from that era, from Harvey's era, the 70s and 80s, encounter heart problems. And I'll go down through the list. September 2014, Caldwell Jones died at age 64. August of 2015, Daryl Dawkins died of heart-related issues at age 58. September of 2015, Moses Malone died at age 60 of heart-related problems. And April 27th of this year, Mark McNamara died of a heart problem at age 60. Now, I've looked around, and I talked the other day to Pat Williams, who we mentioned earlier, and he was sort of at a loss because he went back through the list. And he said, well, you know, Robert Parrish from the Celtics, he's still alive. Dave Cowens is still alive, you know, and Kareem's still alive, so, you know, why us? And he was at a loss, and the people who, and he said that they had cardiac screening, that that was a regular part of the Sixers routine year in, year out. And all the people who were the team doctors from that era are no longer with us. Stanley Lorber, Michael Clancy were the main guys. So it begs the question of what exactly this is. I also talked to Joe Rogowski, who's the chief medical officer of the NBA Players Association. And he says, you know, he said, while this particular situation doesn't raise any red flags, the Sixers situation, that is, he does wonder about, you know, what it means in general for big men. And the best guess right now is that in a lot of these cases, these guys have so many orthopedic problems post-career that they're just not as active as they as the average 60-year-old person might be. Now, that I could see that in most cases, but everybody I talked to about Moses, for instance, said he really did take care of himself post-career, and he was very fastidious about it, and he was still died way younger than you would expect a guy like that. So it's a very perplexing thing, I would say, for sure. So I don't know what to make of it. The best thing that I saw was there was a study in 2016 that said that sort of something called sudden cardiac death, which is a common cause. In fact, it's the most common cause of death in athletes. And males and those who play basketball in particular are in the higher risk category. So I don't know what to make of all that, but I think it's interesting.
It's interesting. I a couple of things. I wonder if I remember Larry Bird saying some years ago, he had some kind of health scare and he came through it. I mean, he said, I always assumed that I'd be dead by now. Mm-hmm. I always thought that, you know, being a big, tall guy like this, there's something about being big. And if you're big, like all your systems are big. You have a gigantic circulatory system. You have a gigantic,
right.
You know, organs and all of that stuff. And
right.
Maybe there's just more room for error there. I mean, I realize I'm talking. I could be talking completely out of my ass here. I'm not a doctor, obviously, but it does feel to me like really big people have some kind of danger. This is an extreme case, but like the pro wrestler Andre the Giant.
Yes,
I mean, everybody sort of assumed that he was going to die young, and he did. Mm-hmm. It's almost. I don't know if there's a physiological explanation for it, but it's always some. Now, I think the particular thing about the Sixers, as weird as it is, I gotta assume that that's just a coincidence. I mean, it's a weird coincidence.
Yeah.
But it's just, I think so too.
Probably.
But there might be something about very tall men and that body type.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's as good a guess as any. I mean, the one thing I should mention is that Rogowski told me a lot of people, I think, assume that that this might be Marfan syndrome, which is a disease. It's a genetic disease that killed volleyball player Flo Hyman several years ago, and also was a reason that a college player from Baylor named Isaac Austin was not drafted into the NBA because he also had that. He ended up playing in China. But it is not that. He said that's genetic and that's always detected very early. So we can rule that out at least. I did want to go a little bit of a sidelight here. Mark McNamara, I talked to him last year and he's a great guy, a very bright guy. And he knew he had issues. He had valve problems in particular. So he knew that, you know, he might not be long for this role. He moved up to Haines, Alaska. He's from California. He's kind of a free-spirited guy, but a very bright guy. And so the quote from this story, this is what I wrote last March of 2019. McNamara said, I was like, okay, I better get up here before it's too late. I don't know how much time I've got, so I want to do this. So he moved up to Alaska in 2005. And he was very careful about, he often visited Cedar Sinai in LA to get an evaluation of his cardiac health. And apparently he was doing well enough. It wasn't perfect, but he was doing well enough. So it really is kind of a mystery that has yet to be deciphered by some very sharp medical minds, obviously.
Yeah, that's a weird one. And you remember, this is a completely different thing, but the the idea that women basketball players get ACLs at much greater rate than men.
Mm-hmm.
It's a completely different thing, but there's something genetic in there. There's something, yeah. Not maybe not genetic is not the right word, but there's something about apparently something about the construction of the joint in for women that's different than men. And this is, I mean, we're heading down a road that we're not qualified to be down, but yeah. It is a very mysterious thing. Yeah,
yeah.
Right.
So one last note about McNamara, and I just asked him about, well, you know, does this make you want to seize the day that much more? And he said, not just seize the day, but total gratification for every gift you've been given in life. I'm also thankful for basketball and this daily battle I have. There's a strength you learn from competitive sports. You build up a lot of internal strength that really helps with having to take on future challenges. And so RIP to Mark McNamara. He's definitely one of the good guys, and one of the people you really enjoyed. And when I learned, I mean, somebody called me, one of his friends from out in California called me to tell me that he had passed in late April. And you know, I can't say that I knew him well, but I can say that I spoke to him on the phone a couple times and I enjoyed speaking with him, and he just had a real vibrancy about him. So it really kind of hit me hard in a way, you know, as hard as something was, you know, that wouldn't be a relative. And you just figure that a guy like that, you kind of hope would live a long and happy life. And he certainly had a happy life, I'll say that. But, you know, it just really kind of hit me hard that he, you know, that he did pass on at a relatively young age.
Interesting to hear him say that things that you learn from playing competitive sports are helping. He felt like we're helping him with this ordeal. Mm-hmm. I've been thinking about that a lot with this pandemic.
Right.
Our football coaches, for example, are they like, who are super organized and super gung ho and super competitive? Are they like ideally suited to sort of negotiate these waters, or are they, because they're so fanatical, the worst people too? I mean, what does the mental and emotional thing that you get from sports, how does it apply to a crisis like this? I think it's a really interesting talk going forward here.
Certainly a fine line that they're walking there, because they're so focused on the bottom line at the exclusion of all else. And this has obviously made them readjust their sights. Now, as much as health is a concern day in and day out, in football, now it has to be that much more so, because now it's life and death.
And honestly, I do not see a lot. I do not see much evidence among college football people that they're not really taking this seriously and they're not going slow. I really thought when the NCAA, you go on June 1st, I thought we were going to have like midnight madness on 1 minute after midnight on June 1st, where people would be out there doing calisthenics or whatever, or hitting blocking sleds, and that has not happened. They do seem like they get it, generally speaking. I certainly hope they do.
Yeah, let's hope so. Hey, there was one other thing that occurred to me in the course of our conversation. I'd just like to end on a lighter note, since we have had a lot of more weighty topics. But there was a note in the last week. Christian Hackenberg is now going to cast his lot as a pitcher. What was your reaction when you saw that come to light?
Well, he's obviously, I mean, he's only 25 years old, and he's obviously kind of at sea in terms of what he wants to do next, and maybe recognizing that football is just not going to happen. I think I've told you this before more than once, but I saw him play so much, and I had no idea what he was going to turn into. It wouldn't have surprised me if he'd have been in the Pro Bowl. It wouldn't have surprised me if he'd have been back home coaching a junior high team in Virginia, you know?
Right.
It's more like the latter now. You know, he's a big guy who has a pitcher-type body, and obviously had a great arm, and he's throwing 90 miles an hour, but everybody throws 90 miles an hour now.
Well,
God bless him. He's certainly not a bad kid, I don't think, and I hope it happens, but and I'm not betting on it.
Yeah, the odds would appear to be long. I mean, I saw his stats from high school and his pitching stats. It was kind of Nuke LaLoosh-ish. You know, he had some control issues.
And one of the things we were talking about, the sabermetrics era, and one of the things that has been learned about baseball is that your prime is younger than people used to think. So 25 is not that young.
Yeah. Because don't they say the
goal is obviously to make the major leagues, and what other goal could you possibly have?
Yeah, and because I think I read this somewhere that the peak is usually like 27, 28, somewhere in there.
27 is now seen to be kind of the heart of the prime. That's when, on average, it's obviously a big sample size, but on average, that's the sort of eye of the storm as far as baseball production for players.
And it's interesting to me because, you know, speaking of what you mentioned before about all these old games being on TV anymore, so an old game will pop up and I'll automatically go back to baseballreference.com and look at the year-by-year stats for so-and-so or so-and-so. And a lot of times I will go look at the age 27 season to see if it holds true, and it pretty much does. It pretty much does.
That's one that you have to really credit Bill James for, because he really was pushing that in like 1983 in the Baseball Abstract, and it was a really good example of a really simple idea that Bill James kind of made a career out of, which is for decades and decades, baseball wisdom was just the accumulated bullshit of, you know, this is something that Branch Rickey said one time, so it must be true. Look, we have records. We can look. We have this endless database of baseball. Why don't we use it and find out what the prime is? Now, that's sort of his very simple genius that started this, whatever it is, this revolution in baseball statistics.
So just to review, Mike Gross in today's podcast has mentioned Branch Rickey and Mother Teresa.
I feel good about it.
As you should.
My work is done here.
As you should. There are very few podcasts that mention those two and Mark McNamara.
That's right. It's a big triple. I sense some social media coming.
At any rate, we will end on that happier note, considering we did cover a lot of weighty topics today. And so we'll look forward to speaking to you again in a few days. And as always, I'm Gordy Jones, and Mike Gross is with us, and we'll talk to you again soon.